The team, the team, the team. That's the thing that's just echoing in my ear right now. As I said, it's nothing super fancy, just good old-fashioned teamwork. And as Bo Sandbeckler used to say, Scott, you know, no man, no player, no coach is bigger than the team.
Welcome, welcome, everybody, to the IBN Sports Update. We are having some technical difficulties early this morning. You know, doing these podcasts before 7 a.m. has been really trying to me. One thing I've discovered is that I am actually not as alert as I once thought I was. Maybe I'm getting old. Maybe that's what happens to you when you get past a certain age. You just don't function as well in the morning, even though you're typically up early in the morning. But we are here. This will probably be a short podcast because I do have to go on air in about 50 minutes. So I was trying to keep the podcast typically around 35, 45 minutes max anyway. So we'll just hit the talking points, get in, get out. You guys just heard Coach Harbaugh talk about no coach is bigger than the team. I thought that one quote was really good. And that's saying a lot because Jim's not a man of many words, but I think that's really the testimony to the Michigan season. No coach, and I said no one man, but no coach is bigger than the team. And, you know, I give him a lot of credit for continuing to put his team first, despite all the things that have gone on throughout the season, the scandals, and just how well they've played even when he wasn't coaching. He's always made it his thing to put the team first, talk about the team, the team, the team, the team. So, you know, at the end of the day, if this is truly his walk off, I think this is a great time to leave. And I'm pretty sure most people would agree. Leave on top, go back to the NFL, pursue your aspirations to be a Super Bowl coaching champion. And there's nothing wrong with that. He has given Michigan the boost that they needed. He's left them or potentially leaving them in a significantly better position than when he inherited the program. And despite it taking longer than expected, this is what they wanted. This is what he wanted. This is what the university wanted. You know, there might be some asterisks beside how they got there, but it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, they are here. They are the 2023 season champions, the Michigan Wolverines. So recapping that game a little, I have to say I'm not trying to be critical of Michigan at all. And, you know, at the end of the day, when you win, there's not much anybody can say anyway. But I think last night was as much about Washington offensively not playing the way that they could have played or should have played or you expected them to play, than Michigan doing anything other than what we expected. We expected them to run the ball down their throat. We expected there to be almost no resistance. And that's what it looked like for the first half, or the first half of the first half. Michigan didn't score for almost two quarters. I think they got a field goal in the second quarter, but like touchdowns and stuff, they didn't come till much later in the game. I think with like maybe 7 minutes left in the game or something like that. So when you think about how the game played out, you got to put some of the blame on this offense, which I never thought I'd be in this position on Tuesday saying that, you know, this is the offense's fault. But Penix didn't look like he had a rhythm. He didn't look comfortable. He didn't get hit a lot. But, you know, there are ways to unsettle a quarterback even without actually hitting him and knocking him to the ground. They didn't take any real shots down the field the first half. And you can't – I refuse to believe that the Michigan Wolverines didn't give them any looks to go downfield. And you know what? Good teams, good offensive teams, most of them don't care if you give them looks. They'll make the looks, you know? And from some of the replay that I saw, it looked like the route combinations were there. I know there was one play, I think, in the second half where, you know, they clearly had a blitz coming. And, you know, if he looks left to the hot read, which was, like, I think the tight end or somebody in the slot, he was open for the first, like, 10 to 12 yards, but he just instantly looked right and checked down. I think Penix was a little too quick to check down, you know. Maybe he just didn't want to get touched up, but he ended up being banged up anyway, you know. Like, I think he was holding his side or ribs, and there was at one point, the first play of the second half, I think he got stepped on by his offensive lineman who got pushed back into his lap. So the little things, you know, that they tried to do to prevent, you know, the inevitable injury to Penix, it's still quite played out that way. Like, he still got banged up. So excuse my French, but if you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, you might as well just do it. And I think that the Huskies, I almost called them the Wizards. I think that the Huskies just let themselves down last night. And I think their coach said something about that post-game as well. Not necessarily taking anything from Michigan, but that the Huskies as a team could have done more to put themselves in a position to win that game. And I would agree. I would agree. Champions execute. That's really the difference between championship football and winning football. Everybody has an opportunity to win. You know, we say it on any given Sunday, any given Saturday, even though nobody says any given Saturday. But, you know, people, you can luck into a win. It's very rare that you luck into a championship. And I think Michigan had championship pedigree from the opening kickoff to the very end of their season. They showed that when it meant something, no matter what was on the line, they were able to execute. It didn't matter if they were playing Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan, or one of them, UNLV. I forgot who they played early in the season, one of those sorry teams. Or if they were playing Ohio State without their coach, which is a big game. If they were in a battle with Maryland. If they were, you know, needing to beat Alabama in overtime. And then, you know, if they were playing arguably one of the best offenses in the nation. They executed. And that is why they are your 2023 champions. So, again, shout out to them. And, you know, privately, always messing around with Michigan. And I'm still not the biggest Harbaugh fan. But they, you know, they won the championship. So, not really much I can say about that. But I will say this. If you're one of those people out here trying to bump posts, like and it's not anything against our Commissioner Ronnie. I ain't worried about him. But, like, I was on Twitter this morning, and people are, like, retweeting 7-8-year-old tweets about Harbaugh. Come on, man. If you got to wait that long to prove your point, then the person who was the detractor is probably right, you know? Or at this point, they've already moved on. I know I have. Like, I don't waste my time hating on Harbaugh anymore. Doesn't matter. Like, he got his championship, and, you know, kudos to the team. But as far as who he is as a coach, whether this defines him in some kind of way as a legend or something, I mean, the totality of his collegiate career would say that he's still not a good postseason coach. He got a national championship, but up until this particular run, hasn't looked good. And that's what people were talking about 5-6 years ago. So retweeting that or saying that's a cold take is kind of silly to me. So that's where I am on that. Can't wait to see what the final rankings are for the season. I already saw that Georgia's favorite to win the national championship next year. Shocker. SEC is going to get their way one way or another, man. It's just how it is. And I even saw Sankey was whining, saying that he just was so disappointed in the way that people reacted. And he felt bad for the committee or something like that. And then I saw a report saying that the committee got death threats and everything. Like, come on, people. Like, it still looks like an inside job. It still looks like it was the SEC cried and people got their way. And not even the SEC cried. I even go specific. Bama cried. Because I'm sure Georgia was upset too. But I still say Georgia should not have been dropped that far. I just don't understand how a neutral site game that was competitive against a top 10 opponent drops you out of the top five or four, sorry, out of the top four. I think we've seen situations where people have lost and still been in the top four in the past. And again, they didn't really define the committee standards. Like, there was no legitimate blueprint. Like, these are the rules. And I know there's a couple things that they said were the rules, but every committee had a different standard for grading or ranking teams. And it seems convenient that whenever, you know, there was a controversy, well, the eye test or the strength of schedule, you know, those two hot buttons that you go to when you can't really explain why you did what you did. Well, I mean, you know, on paper, yeah, okay. But either way, we got 12 teams next year. I'm sure there'll be some hiccups with that. I think a lot of us already foresee the group of five going against somebody like a number five Georgia being as one of those hiccups. But I just want them to make it competitive and make it competitive with teams who have earned their way in, not teams that get in because of who they play or because their conference has got two really good teams, but they didn't really do anything. But the two really good teams are in there. And if you play the two really good teams, then clearly you can, if you play Georgia and Alabama, you can win the ACC or the Pac-12 and yada, yada, yada. Like, no, man. We got to get out of that, and I know I'm going a little sideways on my rant, but I can see that far into the future that we're going to keep having these same stupid conversations about programs like Texas A&M and Ole Miss and Kentucky and Florida and all these other teams, South Carolina, all these other teams that really don't do anything in the SEC, but because they play Bama and because they play Georgia – oh, well, you know, if they were in the ACC, they'd still be 4 or 5 win teams, man. Like, if your program sucks, your program sucks. Like, you're not playing Bama and Georgia that much that you can, like, lean on that. No, you still play other bad teams, man. So just, I'm sorry, got on a little rant, but this is my podcast, so I guess I can do that. Anyway, when that comes up next year, be sure to get ready to hear me play this clip back, because we're definitely going to get that. Recapping Sunday's NFL games, because we kind of do. I mean, I just wrote down some hot button like takes. The Eagles look terrible. That's self-explanatory. They look terrible. You know, a part of me wants to feel sorry for them, but another part of me is like, this could not have happened to a better fan base. It could not have happened to a better fan base. I don't know not one Eagle fan who wasn't passive-aggressively gloating when they knocked off, what, 10 out of 11 in the regular season before their schedule actually got tough. And everybody who had already had at least 2 or 3 losses by that time warned them, hey, look, you got a stretch coming up, man. It could get tough. And they just blew them off. You're next. We got this. We're different. We're not the Cowboys. We're not the Niners. This is our year. And you suck. You suck. I don't care how else you spin it. You suck. If you have 10 wins out of 11 games and you only end with 11 wins total for the season, you suck. You suck. And it's not all on Sirianni. It's not, which I think is the wonderful part, is that it's not all on Sirianni. And, you know, I don't foresee how he doesn't wind up on the hot seat if they don't make a deep playoff run. And I don't see how he might. I really, you know, I started it as a joke just to get people to call into the radio show. But, God, I mean, he might actually get fired if they go into Tampa and get embarrassed in the playoffs. Like, it's bad enough you haven't won much in the last month, but your playoff game. Imagine if they go down there, a team they previously beat this year. If they go down there and they lose by more than a touchdown, oh man. I might actually go out of my way to make fun of them. And I know karma is a I'm trying to keep it family friendly, so you know people can play it at work. But karma's a bitch. I get that. So what? I couldn't happen to a better team, especially after all that crap they talked to Niner fans and just everybody in general last year. You know, it's perfect. I've never seen a a Super Bowl runner-up act like they actually won the Super Bowl. So have fun with that, Philly. I'm enjoying it. The house is on fire, and I'm outside sipping ice-cold water. I could go get a hose, but why would I do that? I'm enjoying the show. Jacksonville looks terrible. Jacksonville sucks. My boy Jamal wants to blame Balky. Probably. I'm a huge Sunshine fan. So, you know, this hurts me more than it hurts you, Sunshine. But you got to play better, bro. You got to play better. I gave you a pass for 3 weeks. I was like, high ankle sprain. He's concussed. If you're going to keep rolling yourself out there to play, I'm going to give you expectations that you're healthy enough to play. And that was not what I expect as far as how you played. So I got to be critical with my guy. And I know some people who were hypercritical of him coming into the NFL, and, you know, they had a little bit to say about him in college, but they more or less were saying, you know, everybody keeps calling this man the next great quarterback, the next Manning and this and that. And he might be more Andrew Luck, which is unfortunate. At some point, we got to call it what it is, man. So I'm going to give Sunshine one more year, because he has Doug Peterson, who understands how to call plays in the NFL. He's had a pretty decent staff around him over the last couple of years, too. I think since Peterson got there, he's had a decent quarterback coach and so forth. Christian Kirk being your number one option, or Calvin Ridley being your number one option, isn't necessarily the best. But I've watched C.J. Stroud light the league up a little with Nico Collins, who wasn't on anybody's draft board, and Tank Dell, who is as big as my son. So I don't want to hear that he needs more help. No. You need to play better, because you are supposed to be a generational talent, and you've got enough talent around you. If you truly are a generational talent, you've got enough talent around you to beat the freaking Titans. Like, come on, man. That's embarrassing. And when are the Jags going to figure out how to stop Derrick Henry? I guess the only way they could figure out how to stop Derrick Henry is just to ride it out. Let him retire, or let him, you know, get cut. I don't know what's going to happen with him in the offseason, but he was saying his goodbyes to the Tennessee fans. So I guess that was their game plan. If we could just hold out, we will outlast him. This franchise will still be around, and Derrick Henry will be retired. Derrick Henry might be 60 and still getting over 100 yards on the freaking Jags. Like, that's just embarrassing. I mean, I know there are certain players who just have great games against certain teams, but that's absurd. And I didn't look his stats up. Anybody can look it up, but I'm pretty sure it's just something crazy. Like, I know off the top of my head, Josh Allen is 11-2 lifetime against the Dolphins right now. He's got their number. But he's a quarterback, and stopping a dynamic quarterback that can run and pass is significantly harder than stopping a guy who just runs the ball, even when he doesn't have an offensive line for real. Like, the Titans' offensive line is not that great. Their run offense is not that great this year. I don't even think they were trying to win until they realized that they could win. What is going on, Jacksonville? They just have to be better all around. And, you know, obviously other people need to be fired. I think they fired their defensive coordinator. That's not the problem. That is not the problem. And, you know, you can go back to when Coughlin had the team and they had that great defense, and they just mismanaged that. They got Trevor Lawrence and then gave him Urban Meyer, which mismanaged, because made it almost a season? I can't remember how many games he made. But that was mismanaged. NTN has been great, but you drafted him as a wide receiver because you gave a coach who, like, has no NFL experience per se the ability to draft, or like GM duty. Like, I don't get it. But that seems to be the thing now. Everybody wants to give a head coach GM. Everybody wants somebody to be Bill Belichick, but I don't think Bill's that great of a drafter either. I don't think any head coach is a great drafter. It's too much to ask. I think that was something that was a myth because of Bill Parcells and maybe the anomaly that he was, where he was a decent drafter. But all these other guys that were dual role, hit coach and GM, they're really not that great They're really not that great. And as they've gotten older, especially Bill, as they've gotten older, look at their rosters. They're not talent filled. They're not talent filled. So, you know, I think some of that has to do with guys getting stuck in their ways. Trent Baalke's getting a little senile there, even though he's a GM and not a head coach, but he's stuck in his ways. And you know, this is coming from a Niner fan. We know he drafts a certain way, and you know, the standard is the standard, as Chase says, and that's how he drafts, by his standard, and it's below average. So Jags got to get it together. They got to get it together because C.J. Stroud ain't going nowhere. That team is definitely going to get better. And, you know, Anthony Richardson's coming back. That means that the Colts are probably going to get better. And clearly both coaches are better than Doug Peterson already, actually. And Mike Vrabel, I mean, I'm confident they'll eventually get it together because he's not a bad coach. It annoys me from a gambling perspective, but, you know, game planning and things like that, you know, when he's had the talent, they've been good. So the Titans just need to spend a little bit of money, and they'll probably bounce back as well. So Jags, golden opportunity at the beginning of the season. I talked about this on the IBM podcast about, 4 weeks ago, how coming into the season, the expectation was that the Jags would win the division and that this would more or less be a breeze because they are the veteran team, you know? They've got the veteran coach. And, you know, I got some pushback from my boy Corey about it, about my approach to the idea that they should be the division champion and that they should be making the playoffs because other teams don't really care about preseason rankings or what pundits say before the season. They don't base their opinions or expectations off that. I get it. And I think I said that on the podcast. I understood where he was coming from, but also I just think that's ridiculous to think that the human element, that these guys don't come into a season and look and see that D'Amico Ryans is a new head coach, that Shane Steichen is a new head coach. They both have rookie quarterbacks. You've got a quarterback in Trevor Lawrence who's been in the league for several years, a Super Bowl winning head coach, and you don't win the division? It's an epic failure. That's all it is. It's just an epic failure. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. It's like, I don't want to show my face in public. I'm not going to go to Cabo or what is it? What we say? Cancun. I'm not going to take the Mexican vacation. I think I'm going to go to Europe. That kind of embarrassing. Because you don't want to bump into anybody at the resort and then they're like, yo, what happened to y'all? I thought for sure the Texans would be here. Embarrassing. Embarrassing. And then to lose to a division opponent at the end of the year like that, that's even worse. But again, I guess everybody's expectations is different. Nothing wrong with that. I just know I would be cussing somebody out and everybody would be fired. Dolphins, just not good enough. That's it. That's the line. They're just not good enough. It's fine. You know, they started hot and fell off. I don't think that's Mike McDaniel's fault. I just think they're just not good enough. We go through this, for the last couple years? And I'm sure people are probably going to blame it on Mike. Mike's a good coach and he's accountable. I really like the fact that he's accountable. The few clips I've seen of Hard Knocks and even listening to him talk, even at press conferences, even though he comes off a little bit like a jerk, he's accountable for his mistakes and how he can impact the game as a play caller and as a head coach, as the guy responsible for preparing the team. I think he does a great job holding himself accountable. That's why I'm optimistic that at some point he'll break through. What I'm not optimistic about is this freaking quarterback and these guys on his team, bro. They are chumps. They're chumps. They don't have it. That, like, you know, when people talk about it, air quotes, it, they don't have it. Whatever it takes to get to the next step, they don't have it. They don't have it. Now, is that talent? Do they need more talent? They could get better on the defensive side of the ball. They can, I don't know if they can get better on the offensive side, but they can get healthier. I think that kind of hurt them a little bit too. But like defensively, they can get better. Offensively, I don't think they can get any better. I'm pretty sure we've seen Tua's ceiling. When people started hinting that Tua should be in the MVP conversation, that's his ceiling right there. That's his ceiling. That mirage that you got where you thought he was a top three quarterback in the league or or top three player, because we're talking MVP, in the league, that is his ceiling. That is not reality. He'll never get there again consistently. He can't. He just doesn't have it. I'm sorry. And Mike, I don't know how much input he's got on decisions. I think I saw a clip where he was talking about how they called him about Tyreek Hill. He needs to get somebody to help him with the defense. He needs a defensive advisor if they do something like that, because that's really the main thing. That's the only thing that really keeps them from winning games, honestly. They'll always score at least 21 to 27, but they can't hold anybody. Like, I guess what I'm trying to say, the point differential. They'll always score a lot, but they can't keep people at bay. They can't hold them at bay. Like, the way Washington held off Michigan for two quarters, like, that's essentially what the Dolphins look like on Sunday, and that's kind of what they look like every time they lose a game, is that, you know, both sides of the ball don't show up to play, and when one side is lacking, the other side just isn't good enough to overcome the worst side. I think I said that right. But again, man, it's 6:30 in the morning. Y'all bear with me. You get what I'm saying. If the defense isn't on their A game, then the offense can't overcome that. All right? And it's the other way around. So that's what I think about the Dolphins. They are traveling to the Chiefs. If you're looking for like analysis and predictions on the playoffs, I'm going to hold that off. I'm actually scheduling an interview with our local boxer, Keith Showtime Shelton. So we will be doing something on Wednesday as far as like an interview. And during that interview, I'll throw in some football questions and have him kind of do the segment with me. And then I'll put that on Friday. So holding off on the analysis there. And Cowboys looking to change the narrative is what I wrote down. Yeah, I got some interviews with Jerry Jones and CeeDee Lamb. Not me specifically asking the questions, but like recording their responses to the question. I got locker room access, and it was good to see that for the first time. not good to see. Like, I could have phrased that better. It was good to experience that opportunity to be in the locker room while the people are interviewing, not while people are walking around in their towels. That was weird. But, you know, the Cowboys just do everything differently. I peeped that from the beginning. This is not my first NFL game. It's not my first NFL game in the locker room, even with the media credentials. Not my first time being in an NFL locker room or NFL press conference, per se. But to see how they just handle the media as an organization just lets you know it's a business. It's definitely a business. Definitely a different standard, definitely a different amount of media attention, which you would expect. I mean, it's America's team, air quotes, and they're one of the more popular teams in the nation. But going through that and having just been to the Niners Commanders game was definitely interesting. Like, I couldn't even get in the locker room when I was waiting to, you know, go in for interviews. There were so many people in the hallway, whereas with the Niners, I actually walked by the locker room when I was going to see the Niners, because I didn't see anybody in there, so I thought that can't be the way to go. I mean, like, there's nobody in there. And when I went into the press conference room, there was like 20 empty seats. Nobody was in there, like one camera guy. I went in to the locker room for the Cowboys, and there's 40 people clambering over to Jerry Jones. I thought he was a player at first because I couldn't see who they were talking to, but it was like 40 people. And there's Jerry answering questions. So I just pulled out my phone and used my go-go gadget arm to stretch out long enough that he can talk into the mic on my phone. And I got some sound bites there. So if anybody wants that, let me know. He just talked about, you know, how he felt about winning the division and, you know, how this team is hopefully different than the teams in the past. And he touched on Mike McCarthy a little and the potential of him being on the hot seat, which I never considered. But, you know, that question came up and he answered that, I think, very politically. And my understanding based off of his answer is that Mike's job is safe as long as Mike does what Mike's supposed to do. But I think at the end of the day, if you look at what he's done for Dak Prescott in general, his job should be safe. There's nothing wrong with that. And then the last thing, I didn't write this down, but I wanted to touch base on this real quick before I pivot to some NBA. Dude, if you, the Saints, I'm a Jameis Winston fan. This is a weird podcast for me because two people that I really like, I gotta be critical. I like Trevor Lawrence. I like Sunshine. I really like Jameis Winston. One, because that's the last time Florida State won a national championship, so I owe him some allegiance there. And then two, because I just think he's a goofy guy. I didn't mind him as a quarterback. I don't really like the turnovers, but Winston's going to give you everything he's got. Bro, you cannot make your own call. If I'm Dennis Allen and you do that, like, I got to go little league coach on you. I might be cussing out a grown man. I might be ready to try to fight a grown NFL player who I can't beat, but it's the principle. It's the principle, the audacity to change that call and then have me at the middle of the field getting yelled at by another coach. After I'm done with Arthur Smith, I'm 100% coming for you. 100% coming from you. And, you know, I saw Shannon Sharpe say they would cut him. I agree, bro. You would not play another snap of football for me. I don't care. Taysom Hill will be my new QB2. You will never play another snap for me again. Ever. That is ridiculous. That is ridiculous. The players, you know, well, the players agree. Then give me their names because all of y'all, well, actually not all y'all, because if it was like a starting offensive line, I might have to consider lenient. But anyway, the majority of y'all would be on the bench or out of my locker room for the playoffs or in general, the organization. You're done. Like just the significance of openly admitting that you guys overruled your coach. And I've joked about it where there's been times where like, you know, there's a fourth down call and it's so stupid, like just run the ball type thing. Like, go back to the Mario Cristobal Miami play. Like, you're the quarterback. Don't run the ball, man. Just take a knee. Like, yeah, that's fine. I'm not going to get mad about that. But in a blowout game, I tell you to take a knee and you decide to run a play and score. Like, anything could have happened. Somebody could have got hurt on an unnecessary play, or people could be mad and get dirty and hurt somebody after you score. You start a fight or something, and then somebody gets ejected. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like, just do what I told you to do, man. You don't get to make that call. And then to have me as the head coach getting yelled at by another head coach, I just, that's just crazy to me. Dennis Allen is a punk. There's just no way I would ever take that kind of open, just disrespect, disregard for my authority. No, man, no. And I don't even consider myself an old school mentality coach, but, you know, I'm setting the rules. You got to listen to me. And I can't have you, somebody who doesn't play on a regular basis, think you could just come in and just do what you want to do when you want to do it. You or Williams or anybody else out there, like, they have to know who's the leader. Because that's how dysfunction happens. And that, you know, thinking back on how the Saints season has went so far, that's exactly why they are in the position that they're in, when they could have easily just dominated that division and they barely got in the playoffs and barely won the division, more so because Arthur Smith is an idiot. So him getting fired was a great thing for the Falcons, and hopefully they don't mess up this hire. Switching over to the NBA real quick before we are done. My guy, John Morant, got hurt in practice, hated it, can't stand to hear it. It's unfortunate. Wishing him a speedy recovery. And, I mean, that's all to it. I'm going to get more and more into the NBA as the season gets on, like, goes on, because, you know, we're fresh out the national championship, NFL playoffs starting. The news cycle is, like, dominated by football. So there's that. And then I wanted to touch on this with my closing rant before I go, because I only got a couple minutes before I got to get out of here. Draymond Green. I'm going to play the clip. We'll listen to it, and then I'll let you know, and I'll try my hardest not to do a lot of cursing, because like I said, I want people to be able to listen to this at work or in the car with their kids and things like that. So if I do get ready to curse, I'll make sure I pause and kind of give you an idea that I'm going to go in that direction. But anyway, here's Draymond Green on what it was like to be suspended for 12 games and what he went through.
I had a conversation with Adam Silver, commissioner of our league. I just told him, Adam, it's too much for me. Like, it's too much. Like, this is too much. It's all becoming too much for me. And I'm going to retire. And Adam said, you're making a very rash decision.
Inhale, exhale. Boy, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I am so sick and tired of this generation of sports, this era of sports where they're all victims and they all have mental health issues and this and that. You've been kicking people in the balls for 4 to 5 years. You choke slamming people, punching teammates, got people in like the figure four. Like, you're doing all kind of crazy stuff out there, bro. You are not the victim. You are not the victim. What do you mean you're going to retire? It's getting too much. Then calm your stupid ass down. What are you talking about? That makes no sense to me. And then he obviously did it on his podcast, but people are really giving this clown a platform like, oh, poor Draymond. You know, Draymond's really showing he's changed. He don't even sound like Draymond. He sound like a cornball. That is not Draymond Green. That's not Draymond Green. He going to say all this and then turn around and end up kicking somebody in the nuts and doing something goofy again. Because he can't play anymore. He's old. Old people in basketball always do dirty things because their biggest advantage is getting in a young guy's head. Because young people, we've all been there. When your mental's not right, you typically make mistakes. And once they get you off their game, they got you. Because they can't beat you straight up. That's his game. He's being old. Every old player, especially when their calling card was defense, every old NBA player who loses a step and all they do is play defense just becomes dirty. Just becomes dirty. Draymond Green could have been the Golden State Warriors' Udonis Haslam, but he's an idiot. He's an idiot and a goof and a clown and a punk. Like, I can't believe that he would sit up and say that. And I'm not even a rant type guy, but I can't stand that, man. Like, this victim, like, oh, I'm the victim. Oh, why would you do this to me? That's what you deserve. They're called consequences. Actions have reactions. Not everybody's going to let you just do what you want to do. That's life. Like, get out of here, yo. And this is coming from your tough guy. I felt really bad when Stephen A. criticized Steph Curry's leadership because of my actions. Shut the hell up, bro. Get out of here. Anyway, that is what we're leaving with. I will be sure to come back with more heat on Draymond Green being a punk, because I'm sure this is not the last time this will happen. Make sure you guys listen, like, subscribe, you know, to the IBN page and all those good things. Check out my page, the unofficial platform with IBS Yeezus, which I'm, again, trying to change the name, but Facebook is being lame. And follow me on Twitter and all that. I will catch you guys on Friday with a one-on-one with Keith Showtime Shelton and his predictions and outlook on the playoffs. So yeah, I got a guess. What, 2-3 shows in, got a guess. Look at me. Can I get a sponsor? I know you guys are out there somewhere. One of my friends got some money. Hook me up. All right, catch you guys later.